Welcome to Groundwire, community radio news, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This episode of Groundwire is hosted by myself, Gretchen King, and produced at CKUT Radio, broadcasting from Montreal on unceded Mohawk territory. In this episode,
dismantling white supremacy has to be the work of white people.
We want to go home. We want somebody to fight these fires and so we can go home early.
But first, here are the headlines. Our first headline comes from Gunarji O'Sullivan at Vancouver Co-op Radio about the Tiny House Project in protest against Kinder Morgan's Trans Mountain Pipeline.
Nation and Greenpeace gathered at a site near Chase, BC on Thursday to build the first of 10 tiny homes that they say will be moved to traditional territory near Kamloops to block pipeline construction. Manuel said she lived in a tiny home at the Dakota protest for 3 months in 2016 and asked the designer to create plans for structures that could be placed along the Trans Mountain Route. The insulated wood houses are to be occupied by people who are struggling with inadequate housing. They are to be 5.5 meters wide and 3.6 meters tall, with wood stoves and solar panels, she said. A part of this tiny house project and movement is that we want to continue to have these, not just as battle against the Kinder Morgan pipeline, but to help solve some of the housing crisis that Indigenous people are facing, she said.
Here's Canhouse Manuel herself.
We have to be very serious and careful when we hear words like safety, and those words are coming from some of the most unsafe companies in the world, like Kinder Morgan, is that we are the ones that don't have a safe and secure environment and life right now because we are being threatened so much, is that the safety and security that we need to ensure that our children have with clean water and also with the big, massive mat camps that are going to be traveling through Suquamish territory, they're proposing that to bring 500 men and have a camp that's able to house 500 men. And this is very threatening to our safety as Indigenous women because we know that from these mat camps, the violence against women increases in the areas. And so we're really concerned about the safety that and the security of our own people in our nation. And so I just wanted to make that note because, you know, Trans Mountain is rebutting our tiny house for safety and security reasons, but that's not the case. And we want to spin that on them that we're not feeling safe at all with the threat of this pipeline coming through our lands.
Thanks to Co-op Radio for that headline. Our next headline is from Michael Welch from CKUW on confronting hate and white supremacy in Winnipeg. Winnipeggers took to the street Saturday, September 9th, demonstrating against the rise of racist, anti-refugee, and Islamophobic incidents hitting the local news in recent weeks. Two separate demonstrations had been planned in downtown Winnipeg. The first, organized by groups Fascist Free Treaty One and Winnipeg Against Fascism, was determined to confront a protest organized by World Coalition Against Islam and related groups who had planned to protest for that day.
We have the power! We have the power!
My name is Helmut Harry Lowen. I retired 2 years ago from teaching sociology at the University of Winnipeg. I've been involved in anti-fascist work for decades. What we did today was to shut down a planned rally by a neo-Nazi who admitted last week on behalf of his group, Worldwide Coalition Against Islam, that we had again out-organized him and he was going camping.
The second event was a larger and more family-friendly afternoon spent in front of the Manitoba Legislature organized by the Islamic Social Services Association. The gathering included speakers from a number of faith and grassroots activist movements. The event was determined to stand up to bigotry in all its forms and decry efforts by so-called patriot alliances seeking to sow division in the community.
So my name's Lorraine McKenzie Shepherd. I'm a minister at Westworth United Church, and I'm also chair of the Winnipeg Presbytery of the United Church. So I have no idea how many came. Someone said 1,000. I'm not sure. Not just racial diversity, but sexual diversity, faith diversity, or no faith, as we were reminded. So if we can listen to hear what the concerns are, what the fears are, I think we can address them. I believe that. In a way where we can all continue to respect one another.
Here in Winnipeg,
we unite
against hate. Community members seeking more information on anti-fascism organizing in Winnipeg are encouraged to visit Facebook pages for Winnipeg Against Fascism and Fascist Free Treaty 1. That report was from Michael Welch of CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on the occupied territory of the Anishinaabe and the homeland of the Métis Nation. That's it for headlines. Groundwire will be right back after this.
Free! American roots, supernatural proof, international truth, superhero salute, all of my people aloof, what do you choose, a bullet and noose, why do we live in polluting and clean and remove, forgive me I lose track, most of my people are under attack, trying to breathe, smother the gas, working the shit, pumping the gas, driving a cab, paying the tax, laying a country flat, open a laundromat, what's wrong with that, everything relative, up in development. And he said he'd been digging a plan. Give him an inch and he taking the land. Everyone's scared to be sticking a man. Must be that taste of freedom. What you think it takes to beat him? He's the cheater. There's no trust in that. I don't even think my country love me back. We are the brave and hunted, we are the same. We are amazing, we are the hated. We are the favorite, we are the change. We are the sacred, we are the strange. We either came on a boat or a plane. Both of them harbored the pain. We are the masters, we are the slaves. We are the cast out in the rain. We are the sheltered, we are the helpless. We are the vain, we are the selfless. We are the blame, we are the shooter. The victim, the home, the drone. We are the here, we are the fear. We're the reflection in the mirror, yeah. We are the people, we are the equal. We are the past and we are the sequel. We are the never, we're the forever. We live in hell and we live in the heaven. Honestly, can't even tell you the difference. We are the cause, we are effect, we are the blessed. And I also believe that we could be the best.
Welcome back to Groundwire, your source for news from the ground up, available online at www.groundwirenews.ca and airing on your local community radio station. You just heard Free from the album World War Free Now by Montreal's own Narcy. Now it's time for our feature stories. Reporting from the rally organized by Stand Up Racism Metro Vancouver, here's Jesse Winsloff from CJSF.
Vancouverites like to think of their city as diverse, inclusive, and progressive, immune to racism, homophobia, misogyny, and other forms of intolerance. In the wake of deadly clashes between white supremacists and counter-protesters in Charlottesville, Virginia, though, a rally was organized by the World Coalition Against Islam Canada and the Cultural Action Party, planned to be held in front of Vancouver's City Hall on August 19th. The event was met with strong local opposition, as thousands of Vancouverites showed up to a counter-protest in the same location.
When I say Muslim, you say sisters. Muslim.
Sisters.
Muslim.
Sisters.
And I say stand up.
The enormous crowd of protesters was addressed by several speakers who discussed Islamophobia, the hypocrisy of anti-immigrant rhetoric, and the colonial history of Vancouver and the unceded Coast Salish, Musqueam, Kwikwetlem, and Tsleil-Waututh territories it occupies. Jesse Kaur is the founder of the Kaur Project, which celebrates diversity and inclusivity within the South Asian community. She described the frustrations minority Canadians experience daily when confronted with racism, prejudice, and the silence of white allies in the face of these challenges.
They place us in positions where we have to defend our humanity. They say there are many sides, like we're doing something to them by hurting. They say to be grateful and stop complaining, like they gave us what we have out of kindness. As a woman of color, I have every right to be terrified and outraged by white people who continue to silence my voice. People of color are terrified for ourselves, our families, and our communities. I'm outraged by the daily microaggressions I encounter. I'm outraged by the status quo, outraged by systemic racism. I'm outraged by white apathy. If it isn't clear, I will make it clear. Dismantling white supremacy has to be the work of white people. Stop acting surprised. Wake up. Listen. Learn. Invest.
Families from the unceded territories of the Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Musqueam peoples were invited to give traditional welcomes at the rally. Christy Lee Charles of the Musqueam Nation spoke of her duty to defend the land for future generations.
My name is Chachlia, and I come from Musqueam. I have lineage to Squamish, and I have lineage to Tsleil-Waututh. I come from the lineage of Kayapalano. Kayapalano is the great warrior who danced across the canoes and said, "I am not afraid, I am not afraid, I'm a warrior for my people." My great-great-grandfather, Hualsimuch, he's the one who met the Spanish explorers at Point Grey. His picture hangs in this governance house. He is the first documented citizen of the city of Vancouver. I'm here protecting my land on behalf of my children, my great-grandchildren, my grandchildren, and all the generations who are to come. Because this is who we are. We're love, not so much the Shkwalowins. That's one common saying you're going to hear across Coast Salish territory. We are of one heart and one mind.
While the size of the gathering was an encouraging show of support for diversity and equality, speakers like Ren Winona of the Tsleil-Waututh Nation made sure to remind attendees of the structural racism embedded in Canadian society, and that it takes more than attending an occasional protest to achieve equality.
Yes. Where was our support for murdered and missing Indigenous women? How many women did it take to die? One white woman is killed by her own people, and there's outrage. And it pisses me off. Because you're on my stolen land, implemented by policies that were created by racist white men. The rape of children and women and the displacement of men in their communities is what colonization is founded on. Now I'm going to a school listening to professors from all over the world who are very prestigious, saying we shouldn't be buying our land back. But let me tell you something. Tsleil-Waututh is buying land back. Musqueam's buying land back. And city councillors are now learning our languages.
While Vancouverites sent a clear message by showing up in the thousands to protest the World Council Against Islam's rally, the very necessity of the counter-protest exposes a dark undercurrent of racism and prejudice most Canadians would prefer to believe didn't exist in their community. The fight for equality and human rights for all starts at home and includes questioning the larger societal structures that perpetuate and enshrine racism, white supremacy, and colonialism across Canada today. From the unceded Coast Salish territories of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem nations, for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, I'm Jesse Wensloff.
Thanks to CJSF for filing that report for Groundwire. In late August, thousands of residents from three Manitoba First Nations communities threatened by raging wildfires were hastily flown from their homes to larger centers in Brandon and Winnipeg. The move to makeshift shelters has generated hardship for these northern visitors and has community leaders outraged at government's response to the crisis. Michael Welch of community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg brings us this feature on the plight of these evacuees.
By the end of August, emergency officials evacuated about 3,700 members of the Garden Hill, St. Teresa Point, and Wasagamac First Nations to protect them from a raging wildfire. The trip involved traveling over water to an island with an airstrip to wait hungry and cold for airplanes of limited availability before being flown to havens in the larger centers of Brandon and Winnipeg. The shelter spaces in Winnipeg were the RBC Convention Center and a soccer complex 10 kilometers away. The venues provided little in the way of creature comforts, privacy, or even proper bathroom facilities, leaving the visitors from these isolated communities increasingly on edge.
I'm Judy Clossom. I'm the MLA for Q8MF. I'm from St. Teresa Point First Nation. They were cold. They had been shuffled throughout the night. They had been waiting for their planes all through the day, only to come and be put into a place where it was still cold, not enough blankets, not enough food. We ran out of food by midnight. And so it was our own chief and councils that went to go buy groceries, went to go buy food, and we started feeding everybody in the line. It was just saddening to see these elders sitting in these lineups.
Dino Flett is chief of Garden Hill First Nation, one of the evacuated communities. On Thursday, September 7th, he took part in a march to the Manitoba legislature aimed at forcing the government to declare a state of emergency, which he argues would bulk up the firefighting effort.
We want to go home. We want somebody to fight these fires and so we can go home early. I mean, it's September. Kids were supposed to be in school already. And we want our kids to be educated as much as we can. We don't want them to lose any days from this. And we just want to go home.
Every day, you know, there's still an eight-month-old baby at the RBC Center. Mother with four kids, and all her kids have bad colds. You know, they need a room. They need proper accommodations. We want to put our people in hotels with proper accommodations.
Any hotel, you can get a booking, but as soon as you say it's for a Red Cross evacuee, then, oh, no, sorry. We wanted a call of a state of emergency so that way the government could utilize any resource it needed to help the displaced people. That would have allowed our people to go into hotel rooms.
I'm Gaylene Wood, and I'm from Garden Hill. It's tiring, and we want home-cooked meals because the kids don't really eat whatever's being served.
Mm-hmm. Looking at the mother straight in the eye, who's got tears in her eyes and wants to get her children safe. Her children are running all over the place. You can see the exhaustion in her eyes. And this person, this voice on the other end of the line, is not letting you help this mother, this young mother, or this elder. And that's the inhumanity of it all.
Judy Clausen believes the crisis could have been averted in the first place if local leaders had been respected by emergency officials.
If they had listened to our leadership of Wasagamat First Nation, none of this would have happened. The fire was small enough that had they sent some water bombers in right from the start, that fire would have been under control. It was just heartbreaking to see. Although everybody was safe from the fire, they weren't safe where we were putting them because it was so cold.
As of Thursday, September 7th, the RBC shelter has been closed to the evacuees, and community leaders like Clausen and Chief Flett are continuing in their efforts to track down adequate lodgings for these strangers in this strange land, hundreds of kilometers from where they call home. From Winnipeg, on the occupied territory of the Anishinaabe and the homeland of the Métis Nation, this is CQW's Michael Welch for Groundwire.
For more information on the situation affecting the Island Lake evacuees, please visit the website www.groundworkforchange.org and click on the link for First Nations Forest Fire Evacuations. Thanks to CQW for contributing that feature to Groundwire. Now it's time for our community radio report, brought to us by CKUT. What is the state of nonprofit, independent community radio news after the end of Free Speech Radio News, or FSRN?
Since 2000, Free Speech Radio News's mission has been to provide factual reports on important international and domestic news stories often missing in the corporate press, and to amplify the voices of the ignored and unheard. Those voices have been broadcast on radio stations across the U.S. in tens of thousands of news stories spanning 17 years. Today, FSRN itself is in the news because of the stories we can no longer tell. The very first story reporter Lena Nozizwe produced for FSRN was about a transgender college student. Today, her last report for us is about the beginnings and the end of FSRN.
This is the first broadcast of Free Speech Radio News. The producers are members of Pacifica Reporters Against Censorship.
The year was 2000. The state of Vermont became the first to pass legislation legalizing same-sex couple unions.
The program, which began over a decade ago, was formerly the only daily, nonprofit community radio news program syndicated in North America. I spoke with Nell Abrams about the history and challenges for FSRN. This report includes audio excerpts from FSRN's last broadcast.
Free Speech Radio News was unique on a number of fronts. First, what Free Speech Radio News brought to stations was grassroots reporting collected by reporters who, by and large, lived in the communities that they were covering across the country and around the world. So rather than hearing reports from journalists who were flown into areas when a major event occurred and parachuted down and then reported through the lens of a Western developed country, Free Speech Radio News turned to reporters who lived in places like the Gaza Strip, in places like Kenya, in places like India. That was one major thing that made FSRN different. A second element that made FSRN unique was that the staff of the program were distributed across the country and around the world as well. So rather than having a newsroom centered in Los Angeles or New York or Washington, D.C., staff members were all around the globe reading local newspapers and bringing stories to the editorial meetings each day that are often overlooked by the mainstream press.
And so as a collaborative news program working in some ways for social justice, what were some of the best practices you saw at Free Speech Radio News over the years?
Well, another thing that made FSRN a really special organization was that it was a staff and worker-run collective. That was the genesis of the program's inception, when people came together having experienced what they felt was censorship, working within a hierarchical structure. They chose to approach their organization differently, and they did. So FSRN was established as a worker-run collective with everyone on par with everyone else, with freelancers having an active voice not only in the editorial process, but also in the governance of the organization.
Now, can you talk about what threatened Free Speech Radio News' sustainability? You had mentioned that it started in the early 2000s. The last episode was recently aired on May 1st, 2017.
So from 2000 forward, FSRN grew in popularity very quickly. We did it in sort of an odd circular turn of events, wind up syndicating our content back through the Pacifica network, the very network that the reporters originally went on strike against. So that was a very interesting turn of events. And Pacifica paid a monthly carriage and licensing fee contract payment with us, and in turn was able to distribute our content to their affiliates program. So that was the largest tool in the early days to our distribution. So when they then became unable to make good on their contractual obligations to FSRN and stopped paying us, that was the lion's share of our income.
So for what I understand now in the U.S., there's no syndicated daily nonprofit community radio news program.
That's correct. It doesn't exist. FSRN did it. We did it as cheaply and as efficiently as we possibly could. And no one has come together since we went dark and found a way to do it.
Given that there is a lack of a daily nonprofit community radio news program now in the United States for community radio stations to air, do you see that there's a relationship between, you know, this valuable resource, this valuable community information resource, and the rise of oppression in media and politics? Do you see a link there?
Well, I absolutely see a link, Gretchen. I think that when we have a buffet of media that has a variety of food groups on it, so a variety of programming, then people have options and choices, and perhaps they sample new things. And I think that the more that people can stay within these very easy to digest media micro meals, the less they are challenged to face uncomfortable and difficult issues, and the less they are able to sort of expand in their own little bubbles. You know, those bubbles grow. I think it's a huge problem. And the more and more we see independent outlets marginalized, the less and less those voices are there to provide any ballast.
And that does it for our program. Over the years, our editorial staff have been based in Oaxaca, Mexico, Berkeley, California, Richmond, Virginia, New Delhi, India, New York City, Cape Town, South Africa, Los Angeles, Tampa, Florida, and Eugene, Oregon. Technical support has been provided at community radio stations like KPFA and WTJU. For the last 3 years, Shannon Young and I jointly served as editors of our program. Roe Packard has been our technical engineer. We'd like to sincerely thank all of the reporters, staff, affiliate stations, and listener sponsors who've made FSRN possible during the last 17 years. Nell Abram, FSRN, Tampa.
Shahnawaz Khan, FSRN, Srinagar.
Jim Kent, FSRN, Hot Springs, South Dakota.
For FSRN, Feri Benawa, Istanbul.
Georgia Clark, FSRN, Jakarta.
For FSRN, I'm Melinda Tuhus in Nash County, North Carolina.
Rami Almighari, FSRN, Gaza.
Bismillah Gilani, Free Speech Radio News, New Delhi.
From Cape Haitian with Cody Emmanuel and Deepa Fernandez.
Naomi Fowler, FSRN, London.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Ponnaya Manikavasagam in Vaunia, Sri Lanka.
From Kakaravita in eastern Nepal, I'm PC Dubey.
Jorge Garreton, FSRN, Santiago.
Putnik Kilambi in Pristina, reporting for Free Speech Radio News.
With assistance from Manuel Rueda, I'm Natalia Viana in Bogota, Colombia.
Roe Packard, FSRN.
To listen to the archives or find out more about Free Speech Radio News, visit www.fsrn.org. Thanks to CKT for that report. That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced at CKUT Radio on unceded Mohawk territory in Montreal. Music this week was by Narcy. Headlines this episode were written by Michael Welch and Carly Forbes. We thank all of our contributors. Tune in again for Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at www.groundwirenews.ca.